Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving deep today into one of the most critical responsibilities we have, really, the stewardship of difficult history. And specifically, we're looking at the mission behind Holocaust Memorial Day HMD, which, takes place every year on January 27.
And our sources are really focused on the plan for 2026.
Exactly. The official theme is bridging generations. Now, at first glance, that sounds like a lovely sort of gentle idea, but our sources, they frame it as a fierce, necessary call to action.
They really do.
We've got a whole stack of material here, articles, testimonies, educational guides, and our mission today is pretty simple. We need to extract the why. Why is this theme so urgent right now? And then the how.
The practical steps.
Yes, the practical personal steps you can take to become a vital link in this chain of remembrance.
It's so important to start with that core message because it's crystal clear. Bridging generations is all about the transfer of
From
responsibility.
whom to whom?
Well, historically, the burden of remembrance fell to the survivors, the witnesses. But as time goes on, that responsibility has to shift. It falls to their children, their grandchildren, and crucially to every single person who hears those stories.
To all of us.
To all of us. And that's the central tension here, Why is this mandate being pushed so heavily now? The answer is, it's simple, but it's also deeply worrying. It's temporal distance.
That's the painful reality, isn't it? Time just keeps moving on, and with every year that passes, we get further away from the Holocaust and from the genocides in places like Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia, Darfur, all the atrocities HMD commemorates.
And that distance creates risk.
Right. And here's where it gets really interesting, or maybe critical is the better word. Our sources detail these specific, measurable risks that come with that distance.
What kind of risks?
Well, as events move from being, living memory to just archival history, memory starts to fade. The sharp, brutal realities begin to blur.
And history becomes abstract.
Precisely. It's no longer a story about real people. It becomes a dusty chapter in a textbook.
And that abstraction is incredibly dangerous. It creates a vacuum.
Yeah.
It's the gap where doubt, denial, and questioning can really thrive.
I see.
When history loses its protective power, it becomes vulnerable. It can be eroded, distorted, or worst of all, just completely forgotten. The sources are clear that the moment the last direct witness is gone, that's not some distant future. For many, it's here now, or it's coming very, very soon.
So bridging generations is the response to that threat.
It's the framework designed specifically to counter that erosion. It recognizes that if we just archive the past, tuck away documents and interviews in a vault, then the natural process of forgetting is going to win.
So we have to be active.
We have to be active. The power of this theme is that it forces us to move beyond just preservation. We have to connect these stories dynamically to the present moment. We have to make 1944 feel immediate in 2026.
That makes sense. If the problem is distance, the solution has to be intentional action. And the sources kept pointing to one core mechanism to do that, intergenerational dialogue.
Yes.
But what does that actually mean? For you, the listener, what does that look like in practice?
It's really about two commitments.
Okay.
First, a commitment to deep, authentic listening. Listening to those who came before, the survivors, the liberators, and the next generations who carried that trauma
Got a second commitment.
is sharing. A commitment to sharing those stories, those hard-won, difficult truths with those who come after us.
Right, so it's a two-way street. Receive and transmit.
Exactly. And the sources are clear. This isn't just an academic exercise. It's transformative. What it does is build a solid bridge connecting memory directly to action. It allows the incredibly difficult lessons of history to light the path toward a future where maybe we actually learn how to do better.
I get the importance of passing on the memory, I do. But when you look at the history here, the sheer scale of the losses, it's just overwhelming. I want to pull the thread on something the sources mentioned, the individual cost. How do we, as the next generation, even begin to process that?
That's the crucial next step in this conversation. We have to zoom in. We have to focus on the scope of loss because this dialogue has to be about honoring every individual legacy.
Not just the big numbers.
Not just the numbers. The simple fact of genocide is that it doesn't discriminate. Infants, children, young adults, the elderly, they all suffered unimaginably.
Yeah.
And this brings us to one of the most tragic details that this theme forces us to confront. In countless cases, entire family lines were just erased.
What do you mean?
There was literally no one left, no one to carry the family name forward, no direct bloodline to inherit the stories, the photos, the memories, nothing.
Wow. That's a huge shift in perspective.
It is. When you stop and reflect on that detail, the complete erasure of a family's future history, it immediately changes the focus. This is like historical CPR.
So we are asked to step in.
Yes. That's what the theme fundamentally invites us to do. We are asked to step in and act as the family for those who are left with no one.
It moves the responsibility from just learning history to adopting a kind of personal stewardship.
Precisely. We are asked to ensure those legacies live on, and not just through oral stories, which fade, but through concrete things, through books, through films, through art, and especially through dedicated education.
And the goal is always the same.
Always. To ensure that never again isn't just a slogan from one era, but a promise that is actively kept by every single generation that follows. We become the custodians of names, faces, and hopes that were violently extinguished.
Okay, so given that incredible weight of responsibility, the next question has to be a practical one. Where do we even start? For our listener, the learner who needs reliable access to this knowledge, how do we build this bridge? What tools are actually available?
Well, we're fortunate that some dedicated organizations have made this task manageable. Our sources point directly to the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust HMDT.
And what do they provide?
They provide free downloadable resources for anyone. Whether you're leading a reflection at work, having a conversation with your family, or, yes, teaching a classroom, these resources make this incredibly complex history accessible. They offer comprehensive guidelines.
That's a relief, knowing the barrier to entry is low.
Yeah.
But I worry. If we're tasked with preserving truth, we need tools that are more than just bullet points. We need something that cuts through that abstraction we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. And the data on HMD engagement in schools is really compelling on this point.
Oh.
It shows that when these resources are used correctly, they help students and learners of any age really achieve three key things. First, they learn the history. Second, they feel empathy for the people and communities affected.
And the third.
They are genuinely inspired to take action in their own lives. They move from just having knowledge to, you know, applied wisdom.
So these resources are effective.
Very. The HMDT resources offer what I'd call the tools to build our bridge. They're not generic. They include things like the secret transcripts of the M Room, the visual testimonies you find in Holocaust art, and the lived experiences of the Kinder transportees. These are primary sources designed to inject that immediacy back into history.
Okay, let's break those down because those are dense concepts. The M Room transcripts. That sounds very academic. Why is that a powerful tool for bridging generations?
It's powerful because it is unvarnished and immediate. The M Room transcripts captured the actual secretly recorded conversations of captured high-ranking German military personnel right after the war. You are essentially listening to perpetrators discuss their crimes, their awareness, their psychology.
Wow.
For a learner, reading these conversations just destroys that historical distance. You're not reading a historian's summary. You are getting direct access to the thoughts and rationalizations of those involved. It makes the horror undeniably tangible.
Which is exactly what we need to fight that abstraction.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you mentioned the Kinder transportee stories. For anyone who might be unfamiliar, who were they and why is their testimony so important here?
The Kinder transport was a rescue effort. It saved nearly 10,000 Jewish children, mostly from Germany and Nazi-occupied lands, who were brought to Great Britain just before World War II. These are stories of rescue, yes, but also of resilience and profound separation.
And their legacy is the bridge.
It's a vital bridge. It connects the massive scale of the Holocaust to something intensely personal. We have the stories of these children growing up, often far from their families who they never saw again, sometimes as the only survivors. Their experience gives you a specific, localized entry point. It emphasizes the direct human impact of global cruelty and the critical importance of sanctuary.
We have to pause here because the sources are very clear on this. They provide a crucial caution. For anyone using these resources, either you're a teacher, a manager, or just sharing with your family, there's a critical advisory.
That's right. This is serious history dealing with extreme trauma. The sources strongly advise reviewing the content first.
Because some of it is very upsetting.
Of course. Some of the material, especially the art or the raw M Room transcripts, contains incredibly upsetting details. The goal is to preserve truth, but that has to be balanced with the need for sensitivity, especially with younger generations. We have to respect the trauma, not sensationalize it.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
Now, moving beyond the core HMDT materials, the sources highlighted a few other resources. I was surprised to see LGFL's The Cold War resource mentioned. I mean, on the surface, post-war superpower tensions seem a bit distant from the Holocaust itself. What's the connection?
That's where the analysis gets really insightful. LGFL, which is a major UK educational resource provider, recommends looking at specific parts of their Cold War module, the sections that focus on the post-war consensus around human rights and the creation of international institutions. The connection is this. The sources argue that the sheer scale of the Holocaust was a driving traumatic force that literally shaped the political architecture of the post-war world. The global covenants against genocide, the very concept of international justice, those emerged directly from the failures that the Holocaust exposed.
So you can't understand one without the other.
You can't. Understanding the Cold War's political tensions requires acknowledging that the shadow of the genocide influenced every subsequent decision about world order. It shows the enduring ripple effect.
That completely recontextualizes post-war history. And for those looking for inspiration beyond textbooks, the sources also recommend Michael Rosen's poetry.
Yes. Michael Rosen's poems about his own family's experience are recommended as a tool for dialogue and personal reflection. Poetry in this context becomes a form of direct, accessible testimony.
It's another way in.
It allows the learner to process the magnitude of the history through emotion and language, not just facts and figures. It's a very effective way to inspire anyone to transform history into reflection and then into action.
And finally, a practical one for planners. The War and Peace resources from the Literacy Shed. This seems to be about integrating this history, not just isolating it to one day a year.
Integration is absolutely key. The sources stress that the real power of bridging generations isn't found in a single day. It's in weaving these lessons into the broader fabric of learning about conflict, humanity, and justice all year long. The goal is to make the lessons of HMD foundational, to ensure the truth doesn't just pass through, but actually becomes part of how we understand the world.
That makes perfect sense.
Ultimately, all the source material reinforces the vital role of every person. By sensitively passing on these difficult memories, we are actively preparing people for a better, more vigilant future. Engaging with these materials, using those transcripts, sharing that art, telling those stories, that's the only way to ensure the distance of time doesn't lead to the erosion of truth.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? The core takeaway is that bridging generations isn't some abstract theme you just observe. It's an invitation to become a steward of history. By starting a conversation, by teaching a lesson, or even just by taking time for quiet, informed reflection on these legacies, you transform yourself. You become a vital link in the chain of remembrance.
You become the connection point.
Exactly. You are the connection that ensures the memory of the past continues to light the way toward a more hopeful, informed future.
The responsibility is now shared, and that bridge has to be built with specific, powerful materials. So if the goal is to prevent the erosion of truth, we have to ask ourselves, which specific legacy among the tools we've discussed holds the greatest potential to bridge that temporal distance for you? To inspire concrete action today, is it the raw, disturbing reality in the secret transcripts of the M Room? Is it the immediate, visible testimony of Holocaust art? Or is it that unique blend of survival and fragility in the stories of the Kindertransportees? That is the conversation you are now equipped to start.